great. Let me start. First of all, round of applause for Polly Toby for being here. Just a brief history before the Q&A starts. She's a journalist. She's been a journalist for The Guardian since 1998. Sorry. She's also a writer. My book is out for promotion. She's a social democrat, and she broadly supports Labour Party. In this year's election, she pushed a tactical vote for a Lab and Lib coalition in support of proportional representation. After 18 months at Oxford, she dropped out and worked in a factory and a fast food restaurant and wanted to write. She then went on to work on the diary for The Observer and turned 8 months of manual work and under stints into a book of working life. Toynbee worked for many years at The Guardian before joining the BBC, where she was a social editor at The Independent. She was a columnist and an associate editor working with Andrew Marr. She went back to The Guardian, and also she has written for The Observer and Radio Times, and one time she edited The Washington Monthly in the USA. Yeah.
Right, well, I'm very glad to be here. We've got a lot to talk about, and I want to hear your views particularly. The reason for coming here is really, my point of view, what I get out of it, is to hear what you've got to say after I've said my bit. I was asked to talk about, well, can the coalition survive? A coalition is a very peculiar thing. We don't usually have them in this country. Have them in other countries in Europe, but it's very rare here. It now looks as if we'll probably always have coalitions from now on, because in most of the years since the war, people have voted in large numbers for Labour and Conservative Party. Now at least a third vote for other parties, which means that unless there's an extraordinary change around, neither Labour nor Conservatives are likely to be able to win on their own again. Labour lost very badly at the election, but the Conservatives didn't win. And of course to the Liberal Democrats. So it's quite likely that if there's a swing next time towards Labour, that it won't be enough. And Labour's going to have to think very carefully what its relationship is with Liberal Democrats now, because the chances are they too will have to work with them in coalition. And all across Europe, there are lots of these middle parties that act as a kind of hinge, going one way and the other. It's not what we're used to. We find it very odd that a party in the middle can flip-flop between left and right, but it does happen a lot in other countries. And in some ways, it's not a bad thing. I think, on the whole, coalition governments are better. If, for instance, we had had the Liberal Democrats in coalition with Labour, I don't think we would have gone to the Iraq War. I don't think quite a lot of the things that I disliked most about what Labour did would actually have happened, because I think they would have said no way. I'm not quite clear exactly what break they're putting on this government, and I suspect they haven't really had a very good deal out of it, because I can't see many things where they can really say, if we hadn't been there, this wouldn't have happened. All of the cuts that are going on and things that are nothing like what the Liberal Democrats promised their voters at the time of the election. Well, can they survive? Very tricky, very difficult to know. All governments live or die in the end by how well the economy goes. If people are feeling good, they've got money in their pockets, there are jobs, things are going well, they have a sense that the country's on the up, on the whole, governments survive. If things are going badly, governments get thrown out. Labour was thrown out, not because of the Iraq War, because after all, they won again in 2005 after the Iraq War, though it was very unpopular. They won in 2005 because the economy was going great guns. They lost last time, mainly because of the crash and the recession and the big deficit that had built up, the government debt, and that really did for them. I think that the big gamble that this government is going, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, his big gamble is that he thinks that he can cut government spending and throw 1.5 million people out of work. Mostly it'll happen next year, beginning to happen now. cut. Oh, sorry, it's my phone. I'm really sorry. That's a, no. I wish I could very gladly give this talk to him. Just turn it off. He thinks that he can get away with cutting that amount of jobs, putting that many people onto the dole. And it's not just the cost of putting people on the dole, it's the money they don't spend, it's the taxes they don't pay, that rolls all the way through the economy, that does huge damage to a country's growth. Well, he thinks that cutting spending, and therefore cutting the debt, because the government won't be spending so much, is the best way to make a strong economy. A lot of other economists think that it's a great mistake. That's his big gamble. Whether or not he's right probably depends on whether the coalition survives and whether this government survives. What we are facing now are the biggest cuts there have ever been. And people remember, you know, before you were born, but Mrs. Thatcher's cuts have sort of gone down in history, a kind of legend about Thatcher cuts in the early 1980s. I'm sure a lot of your parents will remember. And yet this is, this is much worse by far. And let's get rid of this. These are going to be much deeper, last much longer, and I think do a great deal more damage. Nick Clegg, leader of the Liberal Democrats, has also taken a huge gamble in allying himself to the Conservatives. He's now kind of superglued himself to them. He's agreed with everything they've done. He defends all of their policies, whatever they are, even if they're a long way away from the things that his supporters would have expected him to do, on the grounds that they either hang together or they all sink together. And he hopes, too, that the economy will come good in 5 years' time and they'll sail into the next election and everybody will say, well, it hurt a lot, but nevertheless, Britain's on the right path from now on. I think that's a very big gamble. I must say I've been surprised the extent to which his 67 MPs, which is not very many out of a House of Commons of 650, have really hung together, because they are a very different sort of group. They've never been terribly united. There are some people quite far to the right, quite close to Conservatives, and some people who are really very much closer to Labour. Yet so far, there have been very few splits, very few people complaining in public about what's going on or saying they're not going to vote with the government. So far, that coalition looks to me pretty strong. Out there, the people who voted Lib Dem are very angry indeed. 23% voted Lib Dem at the last election. Now that popularity has gone right down to 11, and sometimes, some weeks, it dips down to 9%. So they have lost loads. God damn this thing. Sorry. Really, really sorry. Let's turn that wretched thing off. So a lot of those MPs realise that they're going to be in very bad trouble when it comes to the next election. A lot of them risk losing their seats as things stand. So a lot of those MPs are going to be looking personally at their own situation, saying, am I going to lose my seat at the next election? Had I perhaps better break away from the government or not? A lot of them have, you know, not very big majorities and will be feeling very insecure. So it depends really what they decide to do. But out there's no doubt there are really angry voters. And wherever I go, I find people very angry with the Liberal Democrats indeed. I get it particularly because my newspaper, The Guardian, the editor, chose to announce that he supported the Liberal Democrats for the first time for a long time. Guardian's usually Labour. Most of us individual columnists, because we're all allowed to write what we like, actually supported Labour. But the editor's allowed to write what he writes, and we write what we write. But as a result, I tend to get accused of being a Liberal Democrat, and wherever I go, people say, it's your fault, you told us to vote Liberal Democrat, now look what a hole you've got us into, now look what they've signed up to, look at these appalling cuts that are going to do real damage to everybody. I mean, the tuition fees question is the really, really big one for them, and I'm surprised that they haven't already made much more noise about it. They're all sort. All those 67 MPs are saying, well, we're not quite sure how we're going to vote, whether we'll vote for it or not. Because not only do they have it in their manifesto at the election, asking people to vote for them on the grounds that they would be absolutely voting against any increase in tuition fees, and within a few years they would abolish tuition fees, each of them individually asked by the National Union of Students signed a pledge in blood, virtually, that I will never vote for an increase in tuition fees. So if they go ahead now and vote for it, you know, how much revenge will their supporters, their voters, take on them? Already the National Union of Students says they're going for a decapitation strategy, which means that they're picking off certain leading Lib Dem MPs and campaigning in their seats to try and reduce their vote as much as possible in revenge for them breaking this really solemn pledge that they all made. Well, they haven't broken it yet. We haven't quite got there yet to the voting stage. They're still in a kind of deciding stage. But it does look as if most of them are going to end up supporting it. They say they got concessions. You know, the fees, as you know, are going to go up to £9,000 a year. And that you know, could end up with debts of £60,000 a year at the end of their time in university, your time in university. They say they got concessions, which is true, that there is, it, you now don't pay that back until you earn £21,000, and before it was £15,000, and you only start paying it back by degrees after earning £21,000. You don't pay it all back in one big lump. And so they're saying, look, we managed to modify the fees system. We made it a bit better than it would have been. And so they can produce reasons why perhaps they can say we went along with it. It was, you know, we showed that being in coalition was a good idea. Otherwise, it would have been much worse. There are many more bursaries for students from low-income families. There will be a bit more of that money available for people to have help with their fees. Nevertheless, I sense an enormous amount of anger, and maybe some of you, any of you go on the student demo? Good. Another one on the 24th day of action next week, if you're interested. Now, personally, I find the removing of the EMA, the Educational Maintenance Allowance, even more outrageous than the fees question, because in the end, that really hits at opportunity. It really hits, and I know in this college something like 70% of people here draw on the EMA. It is really important for helping families to get students through the most important hurdle of all, which is getting good A-levels. And what happens after then, life, you know, looks a good deal rosier. It is really important to get to that stage or to get to those qualifications after 16. I think, you know, we are going to see an awful lot more people dropping out because they just can't afford it without the EMA. It worries me a great deal that there'll be a lot more young people not in education or employment. There's going to be an awful lot less employment around. A lot of people who just can't afford the fares to get to colleges, to get to schools. And I think the suffering is going to be great. And I'm looking forward to hearing from all of you about that and how much anger you sense about it and whether people really understand what's just about to happen. We're not quite sure exactly when it happens, whether it happens at the end of this year or later, but it's pretty soon. The Liberal Democrats would say, well, in exchange, we are at least going to have a referendum on a change in the voting system towards a slightly better voting system called the alternative vote, where instead of just voting with an X for the party you want, you can list the parties in order of preference. So you can go 1, 2, 3, 4, which means that if your first choice doesn't get it, then you can at least keep out the one you most don't want to win with your second and your third choice. For instance, if you are an anti-conservative, often before, your most important thing is to try to keep the conservative out. You always had to vote for whoever was most likely to get rid of the Conservative. You couldn't afford to vote for perhaps a party of your choice like the Greens, who you knew didn't really have a chance of winning, but you would rather like to register your vote in support of them, or any other smaller party. It gives smaller parties a chance. You can express what you really want, put that first, and then say put Labour second in order to try and keep Conservatives out. Or if you're a Conservative supporter who wants to keep Labour out, again, perhaps you're very anti-European and you want to vote for UKIP, which is the anti-European, very right-wing party, but you know they aren't, haven't really got a chance. You can vote for them first and put the Conservatives second and know that you're not going to risk letting in Labour. So it is a better voting system. It does also help the Liberal Democrats a bit. I think it's a system Labour should support, but Labour is split half and half. There will be a referendum in May. Lots of you will have the chance to vote for it, and I hope you will at least vote for this modest change to give people a little bit more choice in a system of voting that's pretty rotten, where you get very little choice. It's very uncertain whether that referendum will pass. It's sort of hanging in the balance. All depends on people like you going out and voting in May. But let's just have a look, before I throw it open to all of you, at what these other cuts are that are coming along that are so much worse than the cuts in Mrs. Thatcher's time. A 25% cut in education. That really is enormous. If you think of the cost of a school or a college, a quarter of that going. In effect, most of the costs are actually staff. It means that probably nearly all classroom assistants will go from schools, and an awful lot of teachers too. There was a huge increase in the numbers of teachers and teaching assistants, and in the quality of teachers and the qualifications they had to have during Labour's time, and they were much better paid. And that helped to increase the quality of people who came into teaching. Teaching's now one of the top occupations people want to be, used to be sort of people's 50th choice, and it's now always in the first three. And that's because, I think, during Labour's time, it was given more sense of status, more sense of pride, and pay is a part of that, not the only thing, but more appreciation, I think, of what teachers do. Well, I think we're going to see a lot less of that. The National Health Service, the government has said, we're not going to cut that, but in effect it will be, again, the biggest cut it's ever had, because the National Health Service needs 3-4% extra every year just to stand still, because there are more and more old people, and it's old people who use the health service more. Also, there are more and more expensive treatments and expensive drugs pushing up demand. So just to stand still, it needs at least 3%. Well, it's going to get 0.5%. So that'll feel like at least a 2.5% cut every year at a time when it needs a 3% increase. So it's going to be pretty horrendous. And already, you know, Labour had more or less got rid of waiting lists. You needed a hip or a cataract operation, something, you know, non-urgent, but nevertheless very painful. Now there are hardly any waiting lists at all. Those are beginning to creep up already. And I think by the middle of next year, it'll become quite a big political issue that people will find themselves waiting 6 months, a year, all over again, certainly by 2 years' time. Every single benefit is being cut. Again, in some of them directly, housing benefit cut by 10%. If you're out of work for more than a year, your housing benefit is cut by 10%. However hard you have, even if you've worked all your life and paid your national insurance and your taxes, and you've just been unlucky to lose your job in this recession, after a year, you and your family, 10% cut in housing benefit probably means you can't afford your rent anymore, may mean you have to move, and I think that's horrendous. Every benefit is also being cut in a way people won't immediately realise straight away, which is that instead of raising it with automatically with inflation every year, so it always at least kept up with where everybody else was, it's now going to fall behind about 2% every year because they're calculating inflation on a different measure. Now, at first people won't really notice it because they'll get the same sum of money. They won't suddenly see a cut in their benefit payments or in their tax credits. But after 10 years, or after 5 years, that amounts to a 10% real cut in what that money will buy, because it hasn't kept up with inflation. And that's a very sneaky sort of cut. Already we're seeing big cuts in nurseries, childcare, and childcare tax credits are being cut, which help to pay another 10% cut, which help to pay towards the cut, the cost of childcare, which really matters for all sorts of families, particularly for single mothers. Old people's services are being cut. You used to be able to get, you know, home helps people to help you. Now you're going to have to be bedridden before you get any help at all. You only critical care will be paid for. Youth services, which had begun to be building up you know, things like connections. Have any of you made use of connections at all? Yeah? Well, I mean, not in every area, because it will vary a bit depending on what local authorities decide to do, but the money for connections will be hugely cut back. And the career service, instead of being a young person's career service, is now going to be merged into an everybody's career service, which worries me because I think it'll be less specialised for young people's particular needs. Adult learning, people's second chances in FE colleges after 19, that's been cut back enormously. FE colleges are losing a lot of money for funding people who get second chances in life, want to come back and learn because they didn't first time around get qualifications. And I think that's a tragedy. On the other hand, does that mean Labour will win next time? Not necessarily. Because despite all of that, if the economy were to be beginning to pick up next time, maybe the government would be forgiven. Those of us who lived through Mrs. Thatcher's years will remember that she was very unpopular for a lot of the time. Labour kept going ahead in the opinion polls, was often 10% ahead in the opinion polls until it came to the election, and then the Conservatives won again. And that kept on happening, election after election. Why? Because Labour didn't look quite credible. People can be very angry with the government of the day. They were very angry with Labour in, you know, 2005. And yet when it comes to it, on election day, they look at the plausibility, the credibility, how likely somebody is to be a good prime minister. And it matters very much that Labour has to look like a very solid government with a very strong alternative economic policy that can explain why these cuts aren't necessary. The Conservatives have been very clever at blaming Labour, saying it's Labour's fault, there's this huge debt. Well, actually, every country in the world has this huge debt. I don't think Labour can be blamed for Japan, America, France or Germany's debts, let alone Ireland, Spain, Portugal. But somehow they've persuaded everybody that this is something special to this country and only we are in this position, whereas the crash, the bank crash caused by the bankers and the recession, you know, is a universal global a global problem. But Labour has been successfully blamed for it, and maybe people will still feel that they're to blame. It's difficult to know. I've just written a book, The Verdict, which is trying to assess what Labour did and didn't do well. It's looking at the outcomes, looking, okay, so how were things when they came to power in 97 in education, and how did they leave them when they left power this year? Education, actually, we give them a very good score for, because half of schools were regarded as failing back in 97 by Ofsted, you know, the inspectors, and now it's only 1 in 10. Because the standard that was regarded as average by Ofsted for schools and colleges is now the standard that is used as the absolute back marker. So there has been a great improvement. The numbers of people getting 5 good GCSEs, including English and maths, has gone up from something like 45% to 67%. It's on an upward curve. You know, more people staying on at school, doing better, and that, I think, was a success. But all the way through, we go through assessing what Labour did well and what they didn't do well. They did a lot of things that I really hated, and I didn't think they did well at all. The question is how well people look back on Labour and say, do we want that again compared with what we've got? My feeling is that on the whole, as the cuts really bite next year, particularly after next April when the budget comes, is when a lot of people will lose their jobs. They'll be given redundancy notices in January. They'll be leaving in April. A lot of people will look back on Labour perhaps a little bit more kindly and say, well, at least they didn't do all of this. I think that it's still an unknown as to whether the coalition will help hold together or whether suddenly the Liberal Democrats will come to their senses and say, we didn't go into politics to do this to people. We didn't go into politics to cause this much suffering, and actually we're going to back off even if it means the government falls. The trouble is, if the government falls, they fear they won't get re-elected either. So they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say for now, because I really want to hear what you have to say. I want to hear what you think. You don't have to ask me questions. You can if you want. I just want to hear your own opinions about what you think matters most, what you would do if you were in the government, and what upsets you most.